Go ahead, Brian. You have a trivia game for us to play.
Yeah. I would like to test it out. I think it has potential. The name of this trivia game is Florida or Purdue. So how the game works is I'm going to ask each of you two questions in alternating order, and then there's a bonus question that is worth enough points to render the other questions moot. So, Spencer, I'm gonna, Jason, just wait your turn.
Oh.
This is like Jeopardy rules. You buzz in too early and you won't even hear the full question. And also, I have a mustache. Spencer, the first question is for you. Which team has more defensive sacks, Florida or Purdue?
Purdue.
That's incorrect. The answer is Florida, but by three. Florida has 13 sacks, Purdue has 10. Jason, which team has lost more fumbles, Florida or Purdue?
I'm going to go Purdue because that would make Florida look even worse if they've gotten lucky with fumbles.
Yeah, Florida has lost more fumbles than Purdue. Oh. They've lost eight. All right. Spencer, this one might be the easiest question. Which team has more penalties this year, Florida?
Florida.
That's correct. Florida has 21 penalties than Purdue. 20 is correct. Yeah.
Yep.
Jason, which team has more passing yards this year, Florida or Purdue?
Can I get a third option?
No. I want to remind you that Purdue might not even have a quarterback.
Yeah, I've seen Florida complete passes, so Florida.
Incorrect. The answer is Purdue. 104 passing yards, Florida. All right, so I think Spencer has already won, but Spencer, I'm going to let you get the bonus question.
You can stop talking.
No, this is important. Which team, Florida or Purdue, has more first-half offensive touchdowns in the last month?
Purdue.
The answer is it's a tie. Neither of them have
zero.
A first-half offensive
touchdown. Because Purdue hasn't even been in the red zone for the last month.
Oh, yeah, they've been so diplomatic, not wanting to offend any parties. I do like, by the way, that this is like the most Purdue thing ever, is to say exactly within the 20s. They're like, what if we could turn football into Pong? And the walls were at the 20, and we just bounced back and forth between them, just lobbing field goals. Will Muschamp's like, I'll get that someday. Someday I'll have that perfection.
Just trade the ball back at the 50 over and over again.
It's really like an equilibrium state, right?
It's the most efficient way to do it.
They finally achieved it. It's gone beyond football. It's a form of chemistry and pads. Purdue football. It's less football and more science.
Purdue football. It's all potential energy.
It's science, just like the atomic bomb. Yeah. So great. That's a fantastic start to the podcast.
Yeah, you win.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm so glad you brought that on. I'm Spencer Hall. That's Ryan, better known as Celebrity Hot Tub.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, you should be. I hate you. Joining us, Jason Kirk, SB Nation College Football Editor. Hey.
Hey. Yeah, I'm here.
I don't even want to breathe now. Just thinking
about after all that Florida.
God, that's like, seriously, like, The Onion, have you ever, The Onion has the World Atlas? And I listened to it on the audiobook version on a long trip, and they kind of jokingly go through the Congo and the Republic of Congo. And afterwards, I didn't want to live. Because they're like, ha-ha, here's what really happens in the Congo. And it's like the worst thing you've ever heard, and you're crying, and not even a trip to Stuckey's for a nice pecan log will lift your spirits. That's how I feel now. Thanks. Oh, let's talk about something legitimately happy. Let's talk about Nick Saban.
Mm. Yay!
Yay! Special pressure. According to his agent, Jimmy Sexton, through the convenient leak. By the way, does anyone in Texas not just share every email?
No.
Yeah, I think Texas, they might as well just all be on Google+.
So yeah, they're all on a shared AOL email account.
No. I saw this email, so it couldn't have been on Google Plus. It got shared.
That's true.
It left. It made the AP. So actually, if it made the AP, I assume it's on some Usenet, right? Some sort of massive message board listserv that's gone unchanged in form or focus.
It's entirely possible also that there's some Texas booster who prints all his email, right? And just this is retrieved from his garbage.
Yeah, no, he just puts them out in a big recyclable bin that says emails regarding Texas football program.
Fresh emails to a good home.
Just Chip Brown sifting through them every morning. Hey, morning, Chip. Man, you're thrifty, aren't you? Yep. Haven't bought paper in years. But this email, which was, of course, conveniently shared for one political reason or another, it's Texas. I assume it was to screw somebody over. Was Jimmy Sexton telling them that Nick Saban faced a special pressure at Alabama and that he would only consider Texas above any and all other schools as the only place he would go were he to depart the University of Alabama?
Special pressure is a euphemism for a prostate exam, right?
Yeah, the only thing that comes to mind for me is your mom's under special pressure.
Or on the great menu of, like, exotic hooker menus, right? Somewhere in you know, Thailand, like, special pressure. You're like, I'm going to ask what that is. Because I don't want to just order it, right?
Oh, this is a lot of release forms I'm signing.
Yeah, that's it. This is, by the way, like, do we have any actual motive as to why? Because, I mean, I have a few theories. I want to hear yours. Why would this leak now, besides the obvious reason that Nick Saban likes money?
Nick Saban's probably bored. You know, he has a game to prepare for this week, but he's probably got it all figured out a few hours ahead of time, so might as well have it leak out now.
Isn't the line on this LSU, like, LSU's getting 11 points, 10 points, something like that?
So it started at like 8 or 9, yeah, I think.
I think the line is now at 10.
Okay, so maybe Saban is annoyed that everybody's just sort of back in there. Oh, well, Alabama's just going to run the table, and we're just waiting to see who's going to play them in the national title game. So he's trying to stir the pot a little bit so that there's something. He needs his team to have some sort of adversity, or he doesn't feel like things are right. It was this or either, you know, light somebody's car on fire in the parking lot.
Yeah, I believe he usually does the presser on Wednesday, the regular weekly presser. I believe it's on Wednesday. So now he's got something to get huffy at the media about.
To not talk about.
Yeah.
So now you're saying that he's basically his own weather system?
Sure.
And that he's just now dictating the condition. He's the weather control machine, InfoWars. That's what this is. Nick Saban is a government agent planted to pacify the state of Alabama, occasionally ruffle the waters, right? Just get everything stirred up. And then just fix it with victory, while the real work of turning the populace into robots is done by the minions of the National Park Service police.
Gay robots.
Gay robots from Auburn. Like those people from Auburn could build a damn robot.
The title of my forthcoming sci-fi novel.
What's the week of the Mizzou game and the SEC title going to be like? What kind of Texas rumors are going to come out of there? Like, Nick Saban is the coach at Texas, according to rumor. From Jimmy Sexton says so.
Like, it won't actually be really poorly photoshopped images of Saban that leak on boards and are quickly debunked. No, Nick Saban will actually go down, appear in, like, he'll fly to Austin, right, under an alias, right?
Check in on Facebook.
Exactly. He'll take pictures of himself sifting through that Texas Booster's garbage full of his printed out emails, right, with Chip Brown smiling and giving the thumbs up. Saban will give Chip Brown like $20,000 out of his wallet and say, this didn't happen. And then he'll go back to Alabama and be like, that's outrageous. People can put anything on the internet these days. I'm trying to focus on the game. And they'll kick Mizzou's ass by like 50 points.
Yeah, and then before the national title game, he's like wearing a Mac Brown mask.
He's just like just he and Ricky Williams and just every like McConaughey. Yeah. Like,
see, like
picture of him in bed with McConaughey.
Hey, like that's just a Reagan mask and you painted the hair. Shut up, Mac Brown.
I'm only answering questions on the Longhorn Network about the national title game.
I'm always convinced that Watson Brown and Mac Brown are actually the same person. And that, you know, he uses Watson Brown when he gets in over his head. Like when he took the Vanderbilt job and Watson Brown lost a bunch of games, he's like, I gotta change back to my alias, Mac. Psh, goes to North Carolina, kicks ass. Best reboot I ever had. You've never seen them in the same place at the same time, have you?
No.
Yeah, no. Got a point. Now, neither of you watched the Nick Saban 60 Minutes episode, correct?
No.
No. We're too young to watch that show.
They do check ID at the door. Are you 35? No.
It comes on at like 6, doesn't it?
I'm not even awake at 6.
Man, I don't get in the studio till 2 a.m. Dropping my remixes by 9. Have a little brunch, go to sleep. Wake up. That's how Kanye does it. I watched it, and I will tell you what you missed. You missed Nick Saban berating like a 13-year-old kid for having a weak handshake. Sincerely, it was not set up. It's a magnificent scene. They're going through handing out certificates for a football camp where Nick Saban coaches little kids as if they are going into Ender's Game, okay? Like as if they are going to be defending the universe, right, and our children from malevolent aliens. And when they're given their certificates, they're shaking hands, and Saban could not look more miserable, one. And two, when given the weak handshake, says, come on, now shake my hand. And the kid turns around and is like, wow, that guy doesn't like me. Like, that's what his face says. It's just, whoa, what's wrong with that guy? And it's the greatest thing because it's the only person in the entire piece who's actually like, I think that guy's crazy. Everyone else, oh, he's going to make me a better man, better father, better leader. Only the 12-year-old kid turning away is like, yeah, I'm staying away from that guy.
Do you think Nick Saban has any idea what 60 Minutes is? Like, there's no way he watches it.
60 Minutes, that's too long.
I mean, he's got to think it's good for recruiting in some way. So, like, he's recruiting one specific grandmother. Like, there's one kid out in Dalton he's trying to recruit, and that kid, the grandmother, she's a Georgia lean, but he's gonna win her over.
Because he's got a tap on her TV.
Yeah, he knows.
It's like, man, what does Granny Anderson watch? Well, she watches a lot of 60 Minutes and a lot of, wow, this is weird, like a lot of Supermarket Sweep on DVD. I don't know what that is.
It's on CBS. I've never heard of that channel.
Yeah.
It's the Tiffany. It's on it every week.
It's the Tiffany Network. I ain't got time to talk about crystals.
I would actually love to watch Nick Saban on Supermarket Sweep because he would just walk up the aisles carefully, orderly, put things in the basket piece by piece, the exact antithesis of the chaos Supermarket Sweep is supposed to be.
I think he just tries to remove one of the shelves. Like, if you know how to wiggle them right, they'll pop right out.
He grabs a bunch of those. He tried to call the manager. Excuse me, there's no price on this shredded wheat.
I think you're missing the obvious joke that both in Supermarket Sweep and when shopping, Nick Saban goes to the 10 items or less aisle with a shocking amount of things in the basket and then gets rid of them, picking the best ones from the basket and has them returned to the shelf by others.
Aw.
Aw. Well, you know, that's for the Big Ten fans. That's all they have.
Yeah.
They cling to that, and we are Penn State. That's it.
Enjoy that. That was for you guys.
That was it. We love you. We love you, Big Ten. Enjoy a 7-win Minnesota team dominating.
Woo!
You're so honorable.
You are. That's great. You made good decisions 70 years ago when you weren't alive. Way to go. The other thing that you would really like from the piece, which you really should see, because they managed to piece together a whole story on Saban. With 8 months of work, and I imagine they probably got 8 minutes with him, but they're 8 pretty good minutes. They're talking about when Saban was at, like the town where he grew up, and they show it, and it's Carolina, West Virginia, which supports my theory that if you are named after another city that's in another state, or a state that is the name of the town, then that town is going to suck.
Hmm.
Right? Like if I told you, oh, you're in Mississippi, Texas. Yeah, you're in the worst part of Texas. Wow. If the town is called Mississippi, Texas.
But what if it's like Connecticut, Texas?
No, oh, man. Oh, no.
So somebody's been murdered in a brutal way in Connecticut, Texas.
I know there's a California, Pennsylvania.
Yes, California, Pennsylvania.
Are you sure that's not a California pizza kitchen?
There might be a California pizza kitchen in California, Pennsylvania.
It would only be fitting in the offices of California
and
pizza
actually,
kitchen.
Actually, it's a burger joint, not even related to the pizza restaurant.
Just like, I don't know if you saw the 50 state map of the greatest sandwiches per state when they were listing them. Yeah. They got Georgia right.
They got Georgia right.
They didn't get the picture right.
First damn food map I've ever seen to get Georgia right. But
yeah,
that was
because Deadspin's map was like, oh, peach cobbler for Georgia.
I do declare peach cobbler.
Well, why don't you get me a mint julep so I can refresh myself while I eat this bucket of peach cobbler? The traditional sporting dish that we consume before playing SEC football.
Did you know every other street in Georgia is named a Peaches Tree Street? Margaret, fetch me my peaches.
Those New Yorkers, such anthropologists.
All they eat is apples. What do they know?
But you know, all those maps are. They're just updated versions of placemats for children at a restaurant.
They are, and then they just get passed around the internet because they're like, ooh, children's placemat with awesome stuff.
Whoa. Now, one quick thought. Those placemats for Alabama, it's always a battleship because that's the only thing. There's a boat there.
Hey, listen, it should be the tide, Paul.
I mean, it should be Forrest Gump running through the end zone, if we're being quite honest.
Yeah, well, if we were being quite honest, it would be something else. It would be like a gun and pawn shop. That's it. Alabama gun and pawn.
Police tape over it.
Police, yeah, with some deer. Closed for dealing deer antler spray.
Nick Saban putting some deer antler in his white sauce.
You know, do you think Nick Saban, in traveling through the state of Alabama, really has those thoughts like, give me 5 years. I'll make this the perfect totalitarian state. He's got to. Just cruising down, he's like, these heels. I mean, half of this economy is based on unlicensed liposuction. I could just take this whole state over.
He literally could.
No, I mean, at this point...
This is probably something we should be concerned about, because if he does, they're going to come for us next, because it's virtually indistinguishable.
That's true. We don't really have a natural... border with the Alabama.
I've long worried about that.
I know. I mean, not that it would take much. You need a 3-foot-high fence, because in two states with as much obesity as Georgia and Alabama have, 3 feet's going to keep most people out. Can't swing that leg over. Can't really boost the whole body over.
Well, and plus, if it's 3 feet, then say a few soldiers get over, but the general ain't making it over, if you know what I mean.
No!
The generalissimo, they're going to be cut off from the leadership.
Saban at 4 feet is going to need a periscope to look over that thing.
You're just going to want to make sure that the posts on that fence are real set, because you drive enough jazzies into it, that thing's coming down.
Just a slow battering ram for the Rolling Dead, just creeping over. Oh, that and the final note from the Nick Saban 60 Minutes piece that you need to know. Because he's staying in Alabama forever, Alabama fans, and you're never going to lose a football game ever again. Never. Both of those things are permanent. Don't worry.
No, the one quote I have seen is that he said there's not going to leave Alabama because there's no University of Mars. You know,
that's,
there's no better place to go. So
we don't know that. Although, really... Nick Saban's really overselling the University of Mars. Terrible alumni base.
Horrific recruiting.
Yeah. Facilities? Can't see them from space. Unlike Alabama.
Travel is sheer hell.
It's basically the Hawaii of the interstellar football system, if you want to know what your travel budget's going to be.
And, yeah. See how good Hawaii is.
Yeah. Norm Chow.
Exactly how good Mars would be.
Norm Chow, who this week jokingly said he was too old for the job.
No one argued.
No, yeah, that's the best part. This just didn't even register. You know? Like, I would love it if somebody who actually, like if Gary Pinkel said that, because I would believe him. I don't even know how old Gary Pinkel is. He's probably, what, 62? He's probably Saban's age.
I think he's 27.
27. Like, best fictional ages for a coach. Gary Pinkel is 33. He's been through a lot. A lot. But yeah, if you told me that, like, Nick Saban is 62 and he's running around like a lunatic. And as I told you in our pre-call, which we do occasionally plan for this podcast, after watching that show, I feel like the Nick Saban of, like, ineffectual, unproductive things. Because I had that intensity. It's just for, like, a YouTube video that I have, like, come on, let's get over here. Yeah, let's find that Tumblr with the Pornhub comments over stock photos. Get it.
Yeah, I can confirm that.
Yeah, whereas Nick Saban, like, you know, actually directed himself in something.
Maybe that's a secret to life, finding out where to point your Saban.
I know where I'd like to point Saban.
I'm pretty sure beating Notre Dame has as much social value as looking at a Tumblr of Pornhub comments, so.
You know, maybe more. It might be more relevant to our experience today. The week ahead, we're going to discuss Stanford v. Oregon and Baylor v. Oklahoma, the two Thursday night games. And an unprecedented, I don't remember the last time they were actually, like, there was either one of these games on Thursday night that was this good, and much less two of them on the same night. But first, we would like to answer a little bit of reader email tweets sent in by request. We'll start with you, Ryan.
Okay, the question I pulled is from Tom McGrath. His question is, name the gypsy that Pat Fitzgerald insulted and the content of the insult that led to, obviously, Northwestern's most recent woes. My theory is that at last year's Gator Bowl, Pat Fitzgerald told Dan Mullen that his pants looked comfortable, and Dan Mullen thought that was a fat joke and cursed him.
I think that's as good a guess as any. But, of course, he also lost that game. Never forget.
Well, yeah, Dan Mullen's, when Dan Mullen curses you, it's not going to be something that he himself delivers on. You're going to, something painful will be visited upon you, but not by Mississippi State.
No, see, I think the real sorcerer here, the real warlock, Mullen had to subcontract it to Mississippi State's foremost warlock. That would be one professor of evil, Sylvester Kroom. Kroom is the one who actually has the power to give curses. Remember, he can't actually do anything, but he can ruin your life. So, because all he did was get coaches fired, I assume that Kroom was the one who, out of anger and whatever is left of his loyalty to Mississippi State, cursed Pat Fitzgerald.
And built Ron Kellogg in the process.
Yes.
Well, that's a lot of building. Now, do we think that the state of Mississippi, do we think it might have been Houston Nutt who traveled, he thought he was just going northwest. He didn't know he was going to Northwestern University, so he just traveled northwest until he somehow reached UConn. You know, he's been poking around the UConn job, so maybe he just wound up in the wrong state.
I just imagine Houston Nutt like Johnny Appleseed, just walking barefoot around this great land of ours with a sack full of batteries that he thinks are apple tree seeds.
Planting them all the way.
Planting them. Sprout little D-cell. Just grow your battery tree right here.
I'm powering America.
That's what I'm doing. Just teaching. Just helping. Just going around the countryside. Helping. Planting battery trees just like they got in Arkansas. Which, by the way, all really plausible. Jason, do you have a reader question you would like to answer?
Here's a topical question from Cam Sterling. Which head coaching job would best suit Rob Ford?
For those somehow unfamiliar with this, Rob Ford is the crack-smoking mayor of Toronto. Belligerent, large, and he's like Charlie Weiss fat.
Yeah, it's hard not to say Kansas because they have shown a pattern with their recent hires, Turner Gill accepted, of large and belligerent.
Yeah, the BBW fans of college football, the Kansas football administration, and those hiring for the program.
You know where Rob Ford would be an awesome coach at? and that's Pitt. Because Rob Ford would coach Pitt to one big win. I don't even know if Pitt has anybody they play anymore that could be considered a big win. But that Pitt would beat Clemson or something, and Rob Ford would feel like a god for that one day. And then they would lose every other game he coached.
And his heart would explode.
Into a firework of victory.
Oh, God, it was Pitt. You know Pittsburgh has a lot of hills, right? Because, I mean, I'm down with the joke, but it's really pushing the reality of the situation to imagine.
Yeah, it would demand a lot of pushing.
He's very florid, too. It's very.
You tell me we can't put a gas motor on a Segway?
A rocket.
I'm not going to tell you what you can and can't do with Rob Ford, okay? Because yeah. I'm pretty sure we're past all real believable, plausible scenarios with him because he's the mayor of Canada's, like, you know, flagship city. And he owned up to, by the way, not only owned up to smoking crack, but said he did it in one of his drunken stupors. One.
Who knows which one?
That's the best part. That Rob Ford opened up an entire zoo full of exotic animal scenarios that Rob Ford might have stumbled into. One of which was, one night I got so drunk, .. that I smoked crack.
It's like, one night while I was murdering 8 people, sure I embezzled.
Well, you know, I was in Las Vegas, so I ate human flesh. That's like...
No, that makes sense to me.
That we need to go to Vegas, son.
You see the line at Denny's? Good God!
That would be great if you know, like the buffet at the Bellagio is so long and so extravagant that you walk by and you see a sign that says like human flesh. You're like, oh, whatever. I'm going to the sushi bar. And you're like, wait, shit. Did that say human flesh? And you go back and look, and it's changed. And for the rest of your life, your brain would just be screwed up thinking, did I really see that? I would totally do that if I worked the buffet. Just leave the sign out for a second on some like kind of off looking prime rib that I'd sliced up, and then just switch it real quick. See if somebody was like, "I swear it said that." No, man. Put on the glasses. You'll see what they all really say. The question I will choose to answer is a little bit of it's a little personal.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, you ready? Which is, what's the, let's see, this is, which college football coach has coached the most games in a drunken stupor? I would open this up to any historical era, if you want to go as far back as possible. Because I am sure in the course of this fine game, with as many games that have been played all the way back to the late 19th century, somebody's coached a game stinking drunk.
I feel like, I mean, how do we, let's see. We're probably all thinking Barry Switzer, so maybe we should reach further than that. But I'm sure he's done it and probably beat Oklahoma State, like, by 63 points at the time.
I'm going to go there. Bear Bryant. I bet Bear coached a game hammered off his ass. Not Auburn, but I bet Bear probably got one on. You know, a good daytime buzz. He probably did it for, like, you know, Ole Miss one year.
I mean, the man coached at Maryland. You need a little something to get through that.
Remember the 3 programs he coached? When people mention Bear Bryant's drinking, I'm like, put it in context. He coached at Maryland, Kentucky, and Texas A&M.
Texas A&M before electricity.
He needed liquor.
I'm going to guess Barry Alvarez.
Because, just as a
demographic matter, if you're going to pick somebody who's done something blitz out of their mind, Wisconsin is a great place to pick. And that Wisconsin team he took over was terrible. Like, that, even his decision to take that job had to have been the product of heavy, heavy drinking.
I would say this, that too. Remember, bowl games used to be just a farce. They just used to be fun.
Wait, are you saying they're not a farce now?
Oh, I meant competitively.
I mean, they used to decide the national title before they even played the Bulls. They mattered none whatsoever.
Yeah, they were this sort of frivolity where if you go back and look at, say, the Cotton Bowl, where Gene Stallings coached against Bear Bryant, there are these chucklesome kind of dinners where there's these very attractive young ladies hired for the event wearing cowboy boots and short shorts and a lot of booze and young men with crew cuts. And
It's like a Dean Martin roast.
It is. They're putting on each other's hats. It actually, like, when you watch it, it makes you a little wistful because it would be cool if they just kind of got to, like, you know, jerk around at the end of the year and do that. That would be cool. I would love to see, say, for instance, Will Muschamp attempt to have fun. It'd be like watching a dog try to stand on your hind legs. It's hind legs, but your hind legs that you don't have because you're a person. I wanted to really emphasize the impossibility of that. What's this? What the hell is Fresca? A grapefruit carbonated beverage. What's a grapefruit? Like, it just has a dictionary problem of you just have to go back so far to explain the basic bricks of a sentence. That's all he knows are X's and O's.
What the hell kind of tree is karaoke?
This is a sushi. It ain't cooked.
Are you sure it's dead?
I went to Georgia. You gotta explain these things to me. Well, that's no excuse. Georgia in the 80s. Oh, well, okay. That's 90s, actually, because remember, if you want to hire someone from a winning tradition, hire someone coached by Ray Goff. An idiot, Jeremy Foley. Let's go and actually talk about the games. This Thursday, Baylor v. Oklahoma. Jason, I'm sort of thinking that Baylor's going to waste them.
I have a sneaking suspicion as well that Baylor will probably obliterate Oklahoma. I think the Sooners can be an interesting challenge. They do some things on defense, which, spoiler alert, our fine listeners will get to read some more about on Thursday. But it's going to get pretty nasty.
It's got to be pretty pent up at this point, too, because I'm looking it up here, but Baylor hasn't beat Oklahoma. They've only beat them once, and that was – okay, so they beat them back in 2011. But other than that, going back to 1901, that's the only victory they have.
1901.
Yeah, they've been getting stomped on the regular.
And 135-year-old Bryce Petty is pissed off about that.
We've been keeping him in beeswax and amber.
Yeah.
No, just prayer.
Just prayer.
Bryce Petty, the first Christian mummy.
Hey, listen, just the power of prayer and a little bit of Dr. Pepper strategically applied. You know, exposure to adorable bear cubs.
We run the prayer raid.
No dancing. Oils the joints with the lubricant of evil.
Keep him in a smokehouse. He's fine.
as long as we rub him with brisket 3 times a day.
Just low and slow.
Christian mummy, Bryce
just
Petty.
Scrape off the bark, and it is delicious.
Remember, take the burn ends, reanimate them for another Bryce Petty later. Just keep making them. That
give
got
one,
weird.
Give one to Houston. They need it.
Just notice, by the way, too, that Baylor's a good, like, you know, 20 spots ahead, 24 spots ahead of Oklahoma in terms of overall F+. So, you know, 24 spots, that means Oklahoma is basically as good a team as UCLA. And if you'll remember, Baylor and UCLA, well, they've met. And that didn't go well.
How did it turn out for the Bruins, pray tell?
You know, like, Baylor somehow managed to, you know, stop cruising at the 45-point mark. I think that was the game where Baylor only managed to throw it like 12 times because they didn't need to. Baylor ran them over.
Was that the game where months later Art Briles was still insisting UCLA only scored in single digits?
Yes. Yeah, that was it because, you know, Art keeps his own math. UCLA only scored in that many digits, and we let up is usually code for, well, when you're leading by 50, you kind of take your foot off the gas. And most coaches only joke about that. For him, it's a real practical problem. They got to figure it out.
I am very excited to see Blake Bell try to keep up in this scoring competition.
Holly Anderson asked this question on Twitter earlier today. what is Blake Bell? Not even, is he a good quarterback? I don't even know what he is as a position player.
Blake Bell is, if you took the guy who hit, like, let's, you know how at a basketball game they'll have a contest, oh, you hit a half-court shot and you win, like, a scholarship or a car or 10 grand or something like that. Blake Bell is like if you took that guy and you're like, all right, now you're a small forward for an NBA team. You play all the time now.
I mean, like, it's one thing to be like, oh, he's, you know, kind of like a less coordinated Tim Tebow. Okay, fine. That's pretty uncoordinated. But it's not even that. He was so bad against Texas. And then against Texas Tech, they just leaned on the Red Raiders. That's all they did. They just decided that we'll just have him fall on them. And
yeah,
occasionally, yeah, and occasionally throw a few play action passes off of that. If Baylor gets up, this is the real nightmare scenario where the black comedy comes in, where you'll probably want to watch this. They'll have to have Blake Bell pass them back in this game if they get down by 21, if they get down by 14. And if Blake Bell has to pass them back in this game, we're going to come up with a really inflated valuation of Baylor's defense because that could get hideous.
Well, Baylor's got a pretty good defense. They got fast guys. They kind of do the Oregon thing where once they get a lead and you start getting risky, that's when they, you know, that's when they smell blood in the water. And Mr. Blake Bell, he's a big guy, got a lot of blood in him.
is that what we can say safely about Blake Bell? He's got a lot of blood.
If that man bleeds out, it's going to take a while.
Oh, man, I'm so good. I'm so glad Baylor's good. I'm so glad they happened. They're one of the few little pinpricks of light through this coffin door, coffin hood, hatch.
Oh, you're already dead.
Oh, I'm already dead. 2013's been so sad. Same night, you know, we happen to get Oregon-Stanford, which, Ryan, I'm going to start off with you and ask, is this really, like, I feel a bit underwhelmed going into this because Stanford lost to Utah. That really deflated this game for me because, not just because they lost, but they lost to Utah.
Yeah, but, Stanford lost to Utah because they had this ridiculous idea that, like, oh, you know, we've beaten two ranked teams and everything's going smoothly. We should probably really open up this passing attack with Kevin Hogan. And that was a very bad idea. You know, they didn't recognize their limitations. And I think the only way that they can keep, that they can hang around with Oregon in this game is if they don't do that. They can't just say, hey, Kevin Hogan, go show them why somebody is going to unjustifiably put you at the top of their draft board next year.
I mean, Stanford couldn't score on Oregon State, and they couldn't stop Utah. Here comes Oregon. Open and shut case.
You lost to a team that is 1-4 in conference. 1-4.
I mean, you know, weird things happen.
Yeah,
you know,
but that one
game at Utah—that's a weird game, and they're still a good team and all. But you know, even other than that, what have they done? They beat the shit out of Arizona State, and
they did beat Washington when that meant something. It doesn't now, but
the early Sark bubble.
Yeah.
The yearly
they cashed in on Sark.
they sold
Sark high.
They did. When we all hit, you know, peak Sarkisian.
You know, that bubble is lasting longer and longer each year at least. That's good, right?
You know, that's it, exactly. He can go and be like, listen, the bubble is becoming more under the dome, under the Sarkisian dome. It's a bigger dome each year, collapses later and later. They're like, wow.
It's more horrific each time, but
that's the most depressing argument for extending your contract. And here, take it. You can drive a boat to work. That's it. That's all. Steve Sarkisian should walk in and go, "I drive a boat to work," and they'll be like, "That's bitchin', dude. Awesome. Give him a contract extension. Wish I could take a boat to work," which he does, by the way. He may be like one of two Division I head coaches who takes a boat to work. The other one being Dana Holgorsen. Now, there's not water in between Dana Holgorsen's house and the West Virginia football facilities, but he makes it work. I would also, by the way, point to, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just dropped out here. I heard you talking about Holgo swimming in the rivers or something, but yeah, I'm back right. with you.
All right, good. Well, so we can keep rolling with this. I wanted to go, since we both sort of agreed that this could be like a Thursday night of real blowouts. I mean, Oklahoma at least stands a chance, I think. If Stanford, the depleted defensive line, the injuries that they've suffered, I don't see them being able to keep up with Oregon. You know, it could be like 35-14, but a really like decisive 35-14. Not that like, oh yeah, no, I think this won't be the UCLA game. I think they'll put them in the distance pretty early. Moving on to the weekend though, it's almost like we've forgotten that LSU and Alabama are playing each other.
Yeah, that is sort of just off everyone's radar. I don't really know. Have we all just assumed LSU is going to lose this game because their big wins don't look as impressive anymore, and because their close games don't look that good anymore? Like, it's kind of, we're all sort of at the point where it's like, wow, they give up a lot of points to Georgia, and that's not great.
Yeah, but not the same Georgia team.
Not the same Georgia team, but still, like, a Georgia team that was a little dinged up, and that Clemson held down better than they did. Like, LSU basically did nothing to stop Georgia. And it's just not the sort of thing you'd expect from an LSU team.
I will say, they really only have gotten grandiosely screwed once. The Georgia game, that's an even shootout. That's just going to work one way or the other. I was at the Ole Miss game, and Ole Miss's defense hit every, like, Ole Miss needed, to win that game, they needed three turnovers pulled straight from their ass. They needed three turnovers that were, like, all lottery shots, right? Like, all basically, last-minute darting interceptions made by guys who weren't supposed to be starting. And Ole Miss hit all three of them. They actually got Les Miles, right? That is a Les Miles blueprint, right? Like, I need eight things to happen in this game which are improbable, and they all happen, okay? Well, they got the table flipped on them. Like, that's what happened to LSU in that game, you know? And it was at Ole Miss. I would almost rather face an undefeated LSU team here than face one with two losses. Because I just – isn't that like a really Les Miles thing? Like, they're waiting on this.
The sort of wounded animal.
Not even just the wounded animal, the insane one.
Okay.
Like, the insane one that just can't really be predicted in any sense whatsoever.
Right. What Old Yeller really would have happened. What would have really happened in Old Yeller, right?
Yeah. Oh, he's just sitting in the barn. No.
Oh, my God!
He's bitten the baby, right? Like, we're all going to die. The rabid dog loose under the dinner table of the SEC. That's what I'd like LSU to be here. I don't know if they are, because Alabama's really good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you can make the case that Alabama, while they're really good, they're probably not quite as good as they were last year. And LSU, you know, they've improved in some areas, fallen off in others. They're probably about the same as last year. And that game was really, really close last year. LSU should have won it, did everything it could to give it away. I mean, I don't think this game's a foregone conclusion at all.
I thought 10 points sounded a little high.
Yeah, I think Alabama wins, but it's a weird one to overlook.
I will also say this. Zach Mettenberger is very capable of making the passes that you have to in order to beat this defense.
I think, yeah, he can beat either of these teams.
Yeah, so it's not a, like, I think people have slept on this game. I think it's going to be much better than the relatively flat-lined lack of hype going into it. Anything else from the coming weekend that sticks out to you, gentlemen? You know, besides the logical rivalry game of BYU playing at Wisconsin, a.k.a. one team that doesn't drink and one team that is drinking.
I like UCF Houston playing for a BCS conference title, pretty much.
Yes! Oh, and George O'Leary could lose that game by 500. That'd be great.
To a freshman quarterback named Corn.
Yeah. Bortles.
Bortles versus Corn.
that's actually...
BCS that's, conference that's on, the, actually, on the line.
That's actually happening, isn't it? That we've got on one side. No, you shorted him.
It's Ocorn.
John Ocorn.
Yes.
Ocorn versus Bortles in the most illustrious matchup of quarterbacking names you'll see this year. Anything that sticks out to you, Ryan?
I guess I'll go with Virginia Tech at Miami, because, God, is that going to be sad. Just so sad.
Thank you for going with that.
I'm going to go and look at the late slate at two games, actually, out on Yon West Coast. Because after the big two on Thursday and after LSU-Alabama, it's pretty lackluster slate in between. Oh, Florida plays Vanderbilt. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Lose to Vandy for the first time in, like, you know, 22 years? 26 years?
First time for everything.
Got to happen eventually. But,
new
you know,
experiences.
Future Florida coach James Franklin can size up the place. You know, he's looking around. Two games late, UCLA-Arizona. Both 6-2, both 3-2 in conference, and both with no actual predictable pattern of behavior. So, yeah. and that kicks at 10.
I'm foreseeing the only thing I'm comfortable predicting for that game is like three special teams turnovers, like two muff punts and a block kick. That's all I'm putting on the line there.
And a lot of there's going to be some good coach faces.
Oh, yeah.
Two very expressive gentlemen.
When they purse their lips, they're both the kings of the purse lip game.
I'm going to go ahead and put on upset alert Fresno State.
Every week, Fresno State on quadruple overtime
upset
alert.
Every week, but at altitude, at Laramie.
Oh, a Wyoming team that lost to Colorado State.
Yes, sir.
A Wyoming team that has reshuffled its defensive coaching staff, I believe you mean.
Yes. Improvements have been made.
Okay.
Pardon our mess.
There's a new sheriff in town.
I think you also mean a Wyoming team that lost by a mere 3 points to Nebraska.
Yeah.
For a given unit of Nebraska.
I might pick Colorado State over Nebraska at this point.
You know, Jim McElwain, he brought the process to Fort Collins. And then the process got fat on craft beer and just kind of gave up. But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and put them on upset alert, because you can put Fresno State on upset alert every week because they're that kind of team.
And it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But you know, there has to be some fun here.
Because
otherwise, I'm stuck with NC State Duke.
Yeah. Duke rolling, baby. Duke rolling.
Notre Dame Pitt. That's the ABC game.
I'm stuck with Illinois-Indiana.
You guys remember that Notre Dame almost lost to Purdue this year?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. The world is amazing.
Carl Sagan was right. This is some shit.
Oh, wait. Here is one other sort of angry, sad kid pick. Nebraska at Michigan. 3-7.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Both 6-2 and unranked.
Yeah, that's the
what
best.
Are the odds of that?
Like, how crap is the Big Ten that there are two 6-2 teams playing and neither is ranked?
I like the minor storyline that the winner is still alive for the Big Ten title game and trip to the Rose Bowl.
Rose Bowl.
I would love to see this Brady Hoke team in the Rose Bowl. God, they just get crap.
Because they probably play Stanford.
Oh, no. But
which is basically just clean Michigan State.
Or if Oregon somehow screws this up. And then like, it was this Oregon team versus this Michigan team in the Rose Bowl.
Michigan, we're laughing at you. We're laughing really hard at you, Michigan.
Oh, God. I mean, I think Michigan fans would want to see 100, right? Like, if they're getting into the 80s, they'd be like, no, just keep going, man. Do it.
I'd like to see how many points can be scored.
It would be a considerable tribute to the Rose Bowl game for there to be 100 points scored in the 100th edition.
Michigan will be remembered, I'll tell you that.
Pegasus, just tremendous. 100 points. It's a real thing to be a part of.
It's an honor to be a part of this.
Mark Helfrich is just giving a press conference. Nobody even knows who he is. I'm the guy with the team that coached 100 points. No, you're not.
Get out of here. You don't even have a badge.
Kid.
So I kind of look like a mailman.
Phil Knight's over there just talking to aliens in his tracksuit. There are a few other really sad elements of the schedule that I really would like to point out because now this is getting good to me. Oh, Arkansas, Mississippi. That'd be 0-5 in conference, 3-6 overall. Going up against Hugh Freeze in the Grove at Oxford. It's been ugly for Brett Bielema. And I think if Hugh Freeze senses a little bit of weakness, it's going to get uglier.
You compare that up with Mississippi State traveling to Texas A&M. Mississippi State not winless, only because they got to play Kentucky and barely beat them.
Their intersectional rivalry, by the way, their interdivisional rival is Kentucky. That's how you know God loves Mississippi State. Giving you one little nugget of joy a year.
Also, number 7, Auburn, traveling to play Tennessee, whose freshman quarterback is an aerospace engineering major. Which, that's going to suit him really well in 10 years. But for now,
at Tennessee,
he's a freshman quarterback.
At Tennessee, that just means you're into model rockets. You know, kind of a
cheat. that means you're the guy who, like, when something gets stuck in a tree, fire something up towards it to loose it.
Got it. Hold on, I got a Roman candle. I'll be back.
You got a rocketry program? Well, sometimes you try to make meth in a hot water heater. That'll get up to about 200 feet before it has to come down.
We do it on the roof so you can see the sky.
You know, I mean, you're making some omelets out of some broken eggs. That's really what that is.
Cut a hole in the lab so God can watch his scientists at work.
We keep trying, but that sun sphere just won't take off.
But, you know, you got to keep trying. A few more notes. Can I just say, what the hell happened to North Carolina? Brent Renner's done for his career. They are 3-5. They are awful. They are going to play Virginia, which is 0-5 in conference. And Mike London is oh so fired.
Tom O'Brien is going to come in and coach, I hope, the last, like, 2 games. I hope that's how they pull that trigger.
They're so apathetic. They're just going to hire him.
He's already here. He already drove a semi truck up from Virginia, from NC State.
Exactly. They went and got his stuff for him. This has been in the works for a while. They're like, Tom, all your stuff's here. Jesus, just coach this football team.
I guess we should get married.
We have to have a football team. You're the oldest university in the world.
You're pregnant.
Why wouldn't we have a football team?
Thomas Jefferson played football.
Thomas Jefferson was a wingback.
He would.
Western Michigan, 1-8. Eastern Michigan, 1-8. Something's got to give.
No!
Probably neither will give. But, oh, the gifts these coaches could make together.
Let the Eagles hit the floor. They will. It'll be bad. Additionally... while we're draining the dregs from the schedule, before this gets too depressing, Florida State at Wake Forest.
Danger! Danger!
No matter how big this line is, or where the game is played, or if Wake's down to third stringers, this is automatic upset alert every single year.
You're like, Al Groh is starting a sentient ape at quarterback. Oh man, get my money out. I'm sorry.
Al Groh doesn't even coach.
Jim Grobe.
Anyway,
you've revealed the horrible secret.
Damn it.
Jim Grobe has subcontracted his football program to Al Groh.
He does it for 85. I charge them 90. That's pure profit to me.
My God. That and, oh, if you want real live football horror. I mean the real live football horror. Syracuse is playing Maryland.
Nope. Jesus. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, watch it. Get it in the eyeballs.
Wait, why is Boston College going to New Mexico State? That feels like one of those things where you booked a flight, but you didn't pay attention and you booked it backwards, so you show up at the airport and they're like, no, this is a flight leaving Las Vegas, and right, and you're like, God damn it!
Do you know how that's happening? Two words. Muscle confusion.
Oh.
We'll just stop there.
That makes no sense, so yeah.